I'd be part of a mighty empire, and they would have had to worry about the Nadir.
Freedom's worth fighting for, said Druss.
Why? No one can take away the freedom of a man's soul.
Liberty, then? Offered Druss.
Liberty is only valued when it is threatened. Therefore it is the threat that highlights the value. We should be grateful to the Nadir, since they heighten the value of our liberty.
You've lost me, damn you, with your pretty words. You're like those politicians in Drennan, as full of wind as a sick cow. Don't tell me my life has been wasted. I won't have that. I loved a good woman, and I've always been true to my principles. I never did a shameful thing, nor yet a cruel one.
Ah, but Druss, not all men are you. I will not criticize your principles if you do not try to graft them onto me. I have no time for them. A pretty hypocrite I would be as a robber outlaw with principles.
Then why did you not let Jorek shoot me down?
As I said, it was unsporting. It lacked a sense of style. But on another day, when I was colder or more bad-tempered,
you are a noble man, aren't you? Said Druss, a rich boy playing at robbers. Why do I sit here and argue with you?
Because you need my archers.
No, I've given up that thought, said Druss, offering his goblet to the green-garbed outlaw.
Bowman filled it, a cynical smile once more upon his mouth.
Given up? Nonsense. I will tell you what you're thinking. You will argue some more, offer me wages and a pardon for my crimes. If I refuse, you will kill me and take your chances with the same offer to my men.
Druss was shaken, but his face showed nothing.
You also read palms? He asked, sipping his wine.
You're too honest, Druss, and I like you. That's why I would like to point out that Jorek is behind the bushes there with an arrow notched.
Then I have lost, said Druss. You keep your archers.
Tut, tut, dear man. I didn't expect such defeatism from Druss the legend. What's your offer?
I've no time for your games. I had a friend like you, Sieben the Saga Master. He could talk all day and convince you the sea was sand. I never won an argument with him. He talked about having no principles. And like you, he lied.
He was the poet who wrote the legend. He made you immortal, said Bowman softly.
Yes, said Druss, his mind drifting back over the long years.
Did you really hunt your woman across the world?
That part at least was true. We were wed when we were very young. Then my village was attacked by a slaver called Harib Kar, who sold her to an eastern merchant. I missed the attack as I was working in the woods, but I followed them. In the end, it took me 7 years, and when I found her, she was with another man.
What happened to him? Asked Bowman softly.
He died.
And she came back with you to Skoda?
Aye. She loved me. She really did.
An interesting addendum to your saga, said Bowman. Druss chuckled.
I must be getting melancholy in my old age. I don't usually prattle on about the past.
What happened to Sieben? Asked the outlaw.
He died at Skiln.
You were close?
We were like brothers.
I can't think why I remind you of him, said Bowman.
Maybe it is because you both hide a dark secret, said Druss.
Perhaps, admitted the outlaw. However, make your offer.
A pardon for every man and 5 gold rack ahead.
Not enough.
It's my best offer, I'll go no further.
Your offer must be this. A pardon, 5 gold rack ahead for all 620 men, and an agreement that when Wall 3 falls, we leave with our money and our pardons stamped with the Earl's seal.
Why Wall 3?
Because that will be the beginning of the end.
Something of a strategist, are you, boy?
You could say that. By the way, how do you feel about women warriors?
I have known a few. Why do you ask?
I shall be bringing one.
So? What difference does it make, as long as she can aim a bow?
I didn't say it made a difference. I just thought I ought to mention it.
Is there something about this woman that I should know? Asked Druss.
Only that she's a killer, said Bowman.
Then she's perfect, and I will welcome her with open arms.
I wouldn't recommend it, said Bowman softly.
Be at Delnock in 14 days, and I'll welcome you all with open arms.
Rek awoke to see the new sun breasting the distant mountains. His body adjusted swiftly from dreamless sleep, and he stretched and slid from the covers, then walked to the tower window of the bedroom. In the courtyard below, the 30 were assembling their mounts, great beasts with short-cropped manes and braided tails. Apart from the sound of steel hooves on cobbles, an eerie silence hung over the scene. None of the men spoke. Rek shivered. Virai moaned in her sleep, her arm stretching across the wide bed. Rek watched the men below check their armor and tighten saddle girths. Strange, he thought. Where are the jokes, the laughter, all the sounds soldiers usually make as they prepare for war? Jest to ease the fear, curses to ease the tension. Serbitar appeared, a white cloak over his silver armor, his braided white hair covered by a silver helm. The 30 saluted him. Rek shook his head. It was uncanny. Identical timing, like the same salute in 30 mirrors. Virai opened her eyes and yawned. She rolled over and saw Rek's back silhouetted against the morning sun. She smiled. "Your belly is receding into memory," she said. "Mock not," he said, smiling. "Unless you are going to appear in front of 30 warriors in your skin, you need to hurry. They are already in the courtyard."
"It's one way to find out if they're human," she said, sitting up.
Rek tore his eyes from her body.
"You have the strangest effect on me," he said, gazing into her eyes. "You always make me think of lovemaking at the wrong times. Now get dressed."
In the courtyard, Servitar led the men in prayer, a silent joining of minds. Vintar watched the young albino fondly, pleased with his swift adjustment to the responsibility of leadership. Serbitar ended the prayer and returned to the tower. He was uneasy, out of harmony. He mounted the circular stone steps to the tower bedroom, smiling as he remembered his promise to the tall Drenai and his woman. It would have been so much easier to speak than to mount these stairs to check if they were ready. He knocked on the iron-studded door. Rek opened it, beckoning him in.
"I see you are ready," he said. "We won't be long."
Serbitar nodded.
"The Drenai have met the Nadir," he said. "They are already at Delnok?" asked Rek, alarmed.
"No, no," answered Serbitar. "The Legion met them in the Outlands. They did well. Their leader is called Hugun. He, at least, is quality."
"When was this?"
"Yesterday."
"Your powers again?"
"Yes. Does it distress you?"
"It makes me uncomfortable, but only because I do not share the talent."
"A wise observation, Rek. It will come to be more acceptable, believe me."
Serbitar bowed as Virai entered from the rear washroom.
"I am sorry to have kept you waiting," she said.
Dressed in her armor, silver mail shirt with bronze shoulder pads, she now also sported a silver helm, raven-winged, and a white cloak, gifts from Vintar. Her fair hair was braided on either side of her face.
"You look like a goddess," Rek told her.
They joined the 30 in the courtyard, checked their mounts, and rode alongside Serbitar and Menahem, heading for the Drin estuary. "Once there," Menahem told them, "we will book passage on a Lentrian ship to Dros Purdol. It will save 2 weeks of travel. From Purdol we travel by river and road, and should reach Delnok in 4 weeks at the outside. I fear battle will be joined before we arrive." As the hours passed, the ride became a personal nightmare for Rek. His back was bruised and his buttocks numb before Serbitar called for a noon break. It was a short one, and the pain had become intense by dusk. They camped in a small grove of trees near a stream. Virai almost fell from the saddle, fatigue, deep and numbing, showing in her every movement. But she was enough of a horsewoman to tend her mount before slumping to the ground, her back against a tree. Rek took more time wiping the lather from Lancer's back and shoulders. He didn't need to sit. He covered the horse with a blanket, then walked to the stream. Lancer was bearing up as well as the priest's mounts, Rek thought with pride. But he was still wary around the gelding. It had a tendency to snap at him even now. Rek smiled, thinking back. A fine mount, Serbitar had said that morning, stepping forward to stroke the mane. Lancer snapped, and Serbitar leapt backwards. May I speak with him? Serbitar had asked. With a horse? It is more an empathic bond. I shall tell him I mean no harm. Go ahead. After a little while, Serbitar smiled. He is being very friendly, but he is waiting to snap at me again. That, my friend, is a cantankerous animal. Rek walked back to the campsite to find four fires glowing merrily, and the riders eating their oatcakes. Virai was asleep beneath a tree, wrapped in a red blanket, her head resting on her white cloak. He joined Serbitar, Vintar, and Menahem at their fire. Abadak was talking softly to a nearby group. "We're pushing hard," said Rek. "The horses won't last." "We can rest aboard ship," said Serbitar, "and we will be aboard the Lentrian vessel Westral early tomorrow. It sails with the morning tide, hence the urgency."
"Even my bones are tired," said Rek.
"Is there any more news from Delnok?"
"We will see later," said Menahem, smiling. "I am sorry, friend Rek, for my testing of you. It was a mistake.
Please forget it,
and what I said. The words were spoken in anger." "That is gracious. Before you joined us, we were talking of the Dross. It is our belief that, under existing leadership, it cannot last a week. Morale is low, and their leader Orin is overwhelmed by his position and responsibility. We need a fair wind and no delays."
"You mean it could be over before we arrive?" said Rek, his heart leaping.
"I think not," said Vintar. "But the end may be near. Tell me, Oregnak, why do you travel to Delnok?"
"The possibility of stupidity can never be ruled out," Rek told him without humour. "Anyway, we might not lose. Surely there is at least a faint chance?"
"Dross will be there soon," said Vintar. "Much will depend on his reception. If it is good, and we can arrive while the first wall holds, we should be able to harness the strengths of the defenders and guarantee resistance for about a month. I cannot see a mere 10,000 men holding for longer."
"Woundweaver may send reinforcements," said Menahem.
"Perhaps," said Serbitar, "but unlikely. Already his marshals are scouring the empire. Virtually the entire army is gathered at Delnok, with 3,000 men holding Dross Burdol and another 1,000 at Kortswain.
Abelain has been foolish these last years, running down the army and cultivating trade agreements with Ulric. It was folly. Had it not been the Nadir attacking now, it would have been Vagria before long. My father would love to humble the Drenai. He has dreamed about it long enough."
"Your father?" queried Rek.
"Earl Drada of Dros Segril."
"Did you not know?" said Serbitar.
"No, I didn't. But Segril is only 80 miles west of Delnok. Surely he will send men when he knows you are there."
"No, my father and I are not friends. My talent unnerves him. However, if I am killed, he will be in blood feud with Ulric. That means he will swing his forces to Woundweaver. It may help the Drenai, but not Dross Delnok."
Menahem tossed twigs to the fire, holding his dark-skinned hands towards the blaze.
"Abelain has at least got one thing right. This Lentrian Woundweaver is quality. A warrior of the old school, tough, determined, and practical."
"There are times, Menahem," Vintar said, smiling gently, age sitting heavily on him, following the hard ride,
"when I doubt you will achieve your aim. Warriors of the old school, indeed."
Menahem grinned broadly.
I can admire a man for his talents while debating his principles, he said.
Indeed you can, my boy. But did I not note the merest hint of empathy?
Asked Winter. You did, Master Abbot, but only a hint, I assure you.
I hope so, Menahem. I would not want to lose you before the journey. Your soul must be sure.
Rex shivered. He had no idea what they were talking about.
On reflection, he had no wish to know.
Dost Delnok's first line of defense was the wall Elbidar, spreading snake-like for almost a quarter of a mile across the Delnok Pass. 48 feet high when viewed from the north, a mere 5 feet from the south, like a giant step carved from the heart of a mountain in seamed granite. Cull Gilad sat on the battlements, gazing somberly past the few trees towards the northern plains. His eyes scanned the shimmering distant horizon, searching for the telltale dust clouds that would herald the invasion. There was nothing to see. His dark eyes narrowed as he caught sight of an eagle high in the morning sky. Gilad smiled.
"Fly, you great golden bird! Live!" he shouted.
Gilad pushed himself to his feet and stretched his back. His legs were long and slim, his movements fluid, graceful. The new army shoes were half a size too large and packed with paper. His helm, a wondrous thing of bronze and silver, slipped over one eye. Cursing, he held it to the floor. One day he would write a battle hymn about army efficiency, he thought. His belly rumbled, and he cast his eyes about for his friend Bregan, gone to fetch their mid-morning food. Black bread and cheese, bound to be. Endless wagons of supplies arriving daily at Delnok, yet the mid-morning meal was always black bread and cheese. Shielding his eyes, he could just make out Bregan's tubby form, ambling from the mess hall, bearing two platters and a jug. Gilad smiled.
Good-natured Bregan. A farmer, a husband, a father. All these things he did well, in his own soft, kindly, easy-going way. But a soldier?
Black bread and cream cheese, said Bregan, smiling. We've only had it 3 times, and I'm already tired of it.
Are the carts still coming in? Asked Gilad.
By the score. Still, I expect they know best what a warrior needs, said Bregan. I wonder how Lotus and the boys are bearing up.
News should be in later. Sibad always gets letters.
Yes. I've only been here 2 weeks, and yet I miss the family terribly, said Bregan. I only joined up on the spur of the moment, Gil. That officer's speech just got to me, I suppose.
Gilad had heard it before, almost every day for the 2 weeks since first they had been issued with armour. Bregan shouldn't be at Delnok, he knew. He was tough enough, but in a way he lacked the heart. He was a farmer, a man who loved growing things. To destroy was alien to him.
"By the way," said Bregan suddenly, his face echoing his excitement, "you never guess who's just arrived."
"Oh,
just the legend. Can you believe it?"
"Are you sure, Bregan? I thought he was dead."
"No. He arrived an hour ago. The whole mess hall is buzzing with the news. They say he's bringing 5,000 archers and a legion of axemen."
"Don't count on it, my friend," said Gilad. "I've not been here long, but I would like a copper coin for every story I've heard about reinforcements, peace plans, treaties, and leave."
"Well, even if he brings no one, it's still good news, isn't it? I mean, he is a hero, isn't he?"
"He certainly is."
"Gods, he must be about 70, though. That's a bit old, isn't it?" "But he's a hero!" Bregan stressed the word, his eyes gleaming. "I've heard stories about him all my life. He was a farmer's son, and he's never lost, Gil, not ever. And he will be with us, us! The next song about Drust the Legend will have us in it. Oh, I know we won't be named, but we'll know, won't we? I'll be able to tell little Legan that I fought beside Drust the Legend. It makes a difference, doesn't it?"
"Of course it does," said Gilad, dipping his black bread into the cheese and scanning the horizon. Still no movement.
"Does your helmet fit?" he asked.
"No, it's too small. Why?"
"Try mine."
"We've been through that, Gil. Barkistrid says it's against the rules to swap. A pox on Barkistrid,
and his stupid rules. Try it on. They all have numbers stamped inside. Who cares? Try it on for missiles' sake.
Bregan carefully looked around, reached across and tried on Gillard's helm.
Well? Asked Gillard. It's better. Still a little tight, but much better.
Give me yours. Gillard placed Bregan's helm over his own head. It was close to perfect.
Wonderful, he said. This will do. But the rules? There is no rule that says a helm must not fit, said Gillard.
How's the swordplay coming along?
Not bad, said Bregan. It's when it's in the scabbard that I feel stupid. It keeps flapping between my legs and tripping me.
Gillard burst into laughter, a fine lilting sound that echoed high into the mountains.
Ah, Breg, what are we doing here? Fighting for our country. It's nothing to laugh at, Gil. I'm not laughing at you, he lied. I'm laughing at the whole stupid business. We face the biggest threat in our history, and they give me a helmet too big and you a helmet too small and tell us we can't exchange them. It's too much, really. Two farmers and a high wall tripping over their swords.
He giggled, then laughed aloud again.
They probably won't notice we've swapped, said Bregan. No, all I need now is to find a man with a large chest wearing my breastplate.
Gillard leaned forward, the laughter hurting his side.
It is good news about Druss, isn't it? Said
Bregan, mystified by Gillard's sudden good humour.
What? Oh, yes.
Gillard took a deep breath, then smiled at his friend. Yes, it was good news. If it could so lift a man like Bregan, he thought. A hero, indeed.
Not a hero, Bregan, you fool, just a warrior. You are the hero. You have left the family and the farm you love to come here and die in order to protect them.
And who will sing your song, or mine? If they remember Dros Delnach at all in the years to come, it will be because a white-maned old man died here. He could hear the psalmists and saga poets chanting their rhymes, and the teachers telling young children, Nadir children and Drenai, the tale of Druss. And at the end of a long, glorious life, Druss the legend came at last to Dros Delnach, where he fought mightily and fell.
They say in the mess hall, said Bregan, that after a month this bread is riddled with worms.
Do you believe everything they tell you? Snapped Gillard, suddenly angry.
If I were sure I'd be alive in a month, I would be glad to eat wormy bread.
Not me, said Bregan. It can poison you, so they say. Gillard bit back his anger.
You know, said Bregan thoughtfully, I don't know why so many people seem to think we're doomed. Look at the height of this wall. And there are six of them. And at the end of it, there's still the dross itself. Don't you think?
Yes.
What's wrong, Gil? You're acting so strangely. Laughing one minute, angry the next. It's not like you. You've always been so... cool, I suppose.
Don't mind me, Breg. I'm just frightened.
So am I. I wonder if Sibad got a letter. It's not the same, I know, as seeing them, I mean, but it lifts me to hear they're well. I'll bet Legan isn't sleeping too well without me there.
Don't think about that, said Gillard, sensing the emotional shift in his friend and knowing his tears were not far away. Such a soft man. Not weak, never weak, but soft, gentle, and caring. Not like himself. He hadn't come to Delnach to defend the Drenai and his family. He came because he was bored. Bored with his life as a farmer, cold to his wife and uncaring about the land. Up at first light to tend the animals and prepare the fields, tilling and planting until late afternoon, repairing fences or leather hinge straps or leaking buckets until long after dusk. Then slipping into a rush-mattressed bed beside a fat, carping woman whose complaints would drone on long after sleep had carried him on the all-too-short journey to a new sunrise. He had believed nothing could be worse, but he could not have been more wrong. He thought of Bregan's words about Dros Delnach's strength. His mind's eye pictured hundreds of thousands of barbarian warriors swarming like ants over a thin line of defenders. It's funny, he thought, how different people view the same event. Bregan can't see how they can take Delnach.
I can't see how they can fail. All in all, he thought, smiling, I think I would rather be Bregan.
I'll bet it's cooler at Dros Perdal, said Bregan. The sea air blowing in and all that. The pass seems to make even the spring sun burn.
It blocks the east wind, said Gilad, and the grey marble reflects the heat down onto us. I expect it's pleasant in winter, though.
Well, I shall not be here to see that, said Bregan. I only signed on for the summer, and I'm hoping to be back in time for the harvest supper. That's what I told Lotus.
Gilad laughed, his tension flowing from him.
Never mind, Dras, he said. I'm glad you're with me, Breg. I really am.
Bregan's brown eyes searched Gilad's face for any sign of sarcasm. Satisfied, he smiled.
Thanks for saying that. We never had much to do with one another at the village, and I always felt you thought I was dull.
I was wrong. Here, take my hand on it. We will stick together, you and I, see off the Nadir, and journey back to the supper with tall tales.
Bregan gripped his hand, grinning. Then, not like that, he said suddenly. It has to be the warrior's grip, wrist to wrist.
Both men chuckled.
Never mind about saga poets, said Gilad. We will compose our own song. Bregan of the Broadsword, and Gilad, the demon of Dros Delnok. How's that?
I think you ought to find another name for yourself. My Legan has always been afraid of demons.
The sound of Gilad's laughter reached the eagle high above the pass. It banked sharply and flew to the south.
Chapter 10.
Dras paced impatiently in the great hall of the keep, gazing absently at the marble statues of past heroes flanking the high walls. No one had questioned him as he entered the Dras, and everywhere soldiers were sitting in the spring sunshine, some dicing their meagre wages, others asleep in the shade. The city folk moved about their business as usual, and a dull, apathetic air hung over the fortress. The old man's eyes had blazed with a cold fury. Officers chatted among the enlisted men. It was almost more than the old warrior could bear. Angry beyond endurance, he had marched to the keep and hailed a young officer in a red cloak who stood in the shade of the portcullis gate.
"You, where will I find the Earl?"
"How should I know?" answered the man, walking past the black-garbed axeman. A mighty hand curled round the folds of the red cloak and tugged contemptuously. The officer, checked in his stride, lost his footing and crashed back into the old man, who grabbed him by the belt and hoisted him from the floor. His breastplate clanged as his back hit the gateway.
"Maybe you didn't hear me, you son of a slut!"
hissed Dras. The young man swallowed hard.
"I think he's in the Great Hall," he said.
"Sir," he added hurriedly. The officer had never seen battle, nor any degree of violence, yet he knew instinctively the threat contained in the ice-cold eyes. "He's insane," he thought, as the old man slowly lowered him to the ground.
"Lead me to him and announce me. The name is Dras. Do you think you can remember it?"
The young man nodded so vigorously that his horsehair-crested helm slipped over his eyes. Minutes later, Dras paced in the great hall, his anger barely held in check.
Was this how empires fell?
"Dras, old friend, how you delight my eyes."
If Dras had been surprised by the state of the fortress, he was doubly shocked by the appearance of Earl Delnar, Lord Warden of the North. Supported by the young officer, the man would not pass for the shadow he had cast at Skeln Pass a scant 15 years before. His skin stretched like parchment over a skull-like countenance, yellow and dry, his eyes burning brightly, feverishly, in dark sockets. The young officer brought him close to the old warrior, and the Earl extended a hand like a claw.
"Gods of Misael," thought Dras. "He is 5 years younger than I." "I do not find you in good health, my lord," said Dras.
"Still the blunt speaker, I see. No, you do not. I am dying, Dras."
He patted the young soldier's arm.
"Ease me into that chair by the sunlight, Mendar."
The young man pulled the chair into place. Once settled, The Earl smiled his thanks and dismissed him to fetch wine.
You frightened the boy, Druss. He was shaking more than I. And I have good reason.
He stopped speaking and began to take deep, shuddering breaths. His arms trembled. Druss leaned forward, resting a huge hand on the frail shoulder, wishing he could pour strength into the man.
I will not last another week. But Winter came to me in a dream yesterday. He rides with the 30 and my Virai. They will be here within the month.
So will the Nadir, said Druss, pulling up a high-backed chair to sit opposite the dying Earl.
True. In the interim, I would like you to take over the Druss. Prepare the men. Desertions are high. Morale is low. You must take over.
Once more the Earl paused to breathe.
I cannot do that, even for you. I am no general, Delnar. A man must know his limitations. I am a warrior, sometimes a champion, but never a gun. I understand little of the clerk's work involved in running this city. No, I cannot do that. But I will stay and fight. That will have to be enough.
The Earl's fever-sick eyes focused on the ice-blue orbs of the Axeman.
I know your limitations, Druss, and I understand your fears. But there is no one else. When the 30 arrive, they will plan and organize. Until then, it is as a warrior you will be needed. Not to fight, although the gods know how well you do that, but to train, to pass on your years of experience. Think of the men here as a rusty weapon which needs a warrior's firm hand. It needs to be sharpened, honed, prepared. It's useless else.
I may have to kill Gan Orin, said Druss.
No, you must understand that he is not evil, not even willful. He is a man out of his depth, and struggling hard. I don't think he lacks courage. See him and judge for yourself.
A racking cough burst from the old man's lips, his body shuddering violently. Blood frothed at his mouth as Druss leapt to his side. The Earl's hand fluttered towards his sleeve and the cloth held there. Druss pulled it clear and dabbed the Earl's mouth, easing him forward and gently tapping his back. At last, the fit subsided.
There is no justice when such as you must die like this, said Druss, hating the feeling of helplessness that overwhelmed him.
None of us can choose the manner of our passing. No, that is not true. For you are here, old warhorse. I see that you, at least, have chosen wisely.
Druss laughed, loud and heartily. The young officer, Mendar, returned with a flagon of wine and two crystal goblets. He poured for the Earl, who produced a small bottle from a pocket in his purple tunic. He uncorked it and poured several drops of dark liquid into his wine. As he drank, a semblance of colour returned to his face.
Dark seed, he said. It helps me.
It is habit forming, said Druss, but the Earl chuckled.
Tell me, Druss, he said, why did you laugh when I said you had chosen your death?
Because I am not ready to give in to the old bastard yet. He wants me, but I will make it damned hard for him.
You have always seen death as your own personal enemy. Does he exist, do you think?
Who knows? I like to think so. I like to think this is all a game. All life is a test between him and me.
But is it?
No, but it gives me an edge. I have 600 archers joining us within 14 days.
That is wonderful news. How in heavens did you manage it? Wound Weaver sent word he could spare not a man.
They are outlaws, and I have promised them a pardon, and 5 gold rack ahead.
I don't like it, Druss. They are mercenaries and not to be trusted.
You have asked me to take over, said Druss, so trust me. I won't let you down. Order the pardons to be drawn up and prepare notes against the treasury in Drenon.
He turned to the young officer, standing patiently by the window.
You, young Mendar.
Sir?
Go and tell... Ask Gan Orin if he will see me in an hour. My friend and I have much to talk over, but tell him that I would be grateful for a meeting. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Then get on with it.
The officer saluted and left.
Now, before you tire, my friend, let us get down to business. How many fighting men have you?
Just over 9,000. But 6,000 of those are recruits, and only 1,000, the Legion, are battle-hardened warriors.
Sergeants?
10, led by Kalvar Sin. You remember him?
Aye, a point on the credit side.
For the rest of the hour, Druss questioned the Earl, and by the end of the time, he was visibly weaker. He began to cough blood once more, eyes squeezed shut against the pain that racked him. Druss lifted him from his chair.
"Where is your room?"
he asked, but the Earl was unconscious. Druss strode from the hall, bearing the limp form of the Warden of the North. He hailed a passing soldier, gained directions, and ordered Kalvar Sin to be summoned. Druss sat at the foot of the Earl's bed as the elderly surgeon ministered to the dying man. Kalvar Sin had changed little. His shaven head still gleamed like polished marble, and his black eye patch looked even more tattered than Druss remembered.
"How is he?" asked Druss.
"How do you think he is, you old fool?" answered the surgeon. "He is dying. He cannot last another 2 days."
"I see you have retained your good humour, doctor," said Druss, grinning.
"What is there to be good-humoured about?" queried the surgeon. "An old friend is dying, and thousands of young men will follow him within the next few weeks."
"Perhaps... it is good to see you, anyway," said Druss, rising.
"Well, it's not good to see you," said Kalvar Sin, a gleam in his eye and a faint smile on his lips. "Where you go, the crows gather.
Anyway, how is it that you seem so ridiculously healthy?"
"You are the doctor, you tell me."
"Because you are not human. You were carved out of stone on a winter's night and given life by a demon. Now get out, I have work to do."
"Where will I find Gan Orin?"
"Main barracks. Now go." Druss grinned and left the room. Dun Mendar took a deep breath.
"You don't like him, sir?"
"Like him? Of course I like him," snapped the surgeon. "He kills men clean, boy. Saves me work. Now you get out, too."
As Druss walked across the parade ground before the main barracks building, he became aware of the stares of the soldiers and the muted whispers as he passed. He smiled inwardly. It had begun. From now on he would be unable to relax for a moment. Never could he show these men a glimpse of Druss the man. He was the legend, the invincible captain of the axe, indestructible Druss. He ignored the salutes until he reached the main entrance, where 2 guards snapped to attention.
"Where will I find Gran Orin?" he asked the first.
"Third doorway is the 5th corridor on the right,"
answered the soldier, back straight, eyes staring ahead. Druss marched inside, located the room, and knocked on the door.
"Come,"
said a voice from within, and Druss entered. The desk was immaculately tidy, the office spartanly furnished but smart. The man behind the desk was tubby, with soft, doe-like, dark eyes. He looked out of place in the gold epaulets of a Drenai Gan.
"You are Gan Orin?" asked Druss.
"I am. You must be Druss. Come in, my dear fellow, and have a seat." "You have seen the Earl?" "Yes, of course you have. Of course you have. I expect he has told you about our problems here. Not easy, not easy at all. Have you eaten?"
The man was sweating and ill at ease, and Druss felt sorry for him. He had served under countless commanders in his lifetime. Many were fine, but as many were incompetent, foolish, vain, or cowardly. He did not know as yet into which category Orin fell, but he sympathized with his problems. On a shelf by the window stood a wooden platter bearing black bread and cheese.
"I will have some of that, if I may," said Druss.
"Oh, but of course.
Orin passed it to him.
How is the Earl? A bad business, such a fine man. A friend of his, weren't you? At Skeln together. Wonderful story. Inspiring.
Druss ate slowly, enjoying the gritty bread. The cheese was good, too, mellow and full-flavoured. He rethought his original plan to tackle Orin by pointing out the shambles into which the Druss had fallen, the apathy and the ramshackle organization. A man must know his limitations, he thought. If he exceeds them, nature has a way of playing cruel tricks. Orin should never have accepted Garn rank, but in peacetime he would be easily absorbed. Now he stood out like a wooden horse in a charge.
"You must be exhausted," Druss said at last.
"What?"
"Exhausted. The workload here is enough to break a lesser man. Organization of supplies, training, patrol, strategy, planning. You must be completely worn out."
"Yes, it is tiring," said Orin, wiping the sweat from his brow, his relief evident. "Not many people realize the problems of command. It's a nightmare. Can I offer you a drink?"
"No, thank you. Would it help if I took some of the weight from your shoulders?"
"In what way? You're not asking me to stand down, are you?"
"Great Misael, no," said Druss with feeling. "I would be lost. No, I meant nothing of that kind. But time is short, and no one can expect you to bear this burden alone. I would suggest you turn over to me the training and all the responsibility for preparing the defence. We need to block those tunnels behind the gates and set work parties to raising the buildings from wall 4 to wall 6.
"Block the tunnels? Raise the buildings? I don't understand you, Druss," said Orin. "They are all privately owned. There would be an uproar."
"Exactly," said the old warrior gently. "And that is why you must appoint an outsider to take the responsibility. Those tunnels behind the gates were built so that a small rearguard could hold an enemy force long enough to allow the defenders to move back to the next wall. I proposed to destroy the buildings between walls 4 and 6 and use the rubble to block the tunnels. Ulrich will expend a lot of men in order to breach the gates, and it will avail him nothing."
"But why destroy the buildings?" asked Orin. "We can bring rubble in from the south of the pass."
"There is no killing ground," said the old warrior. "We must get back to the original plan of the Druss. When Ulrich's men breach the first wall, I want every archer in the Druss peppering them. Every yard of open ground will be littered with Nadir dead. We're outnumbered 500 to 1, and we have to level the odds somehow."
Orin bit his lip and rubbed his chin, his mind working furiously. He glanced at the white-bearded warrior seated calmly before him. As soon as he had heard Druss had arrived, he had prepared for the certainty that he would be replaced, sent back to Drennan in disgrace. Now he was being offered a lifeline. He should have thought of raising the buildings and blocking the tunnels, he knew it, just as he knew he was miscast as a gun. It was a hard fact to accept. Throughout the last 5 years since his elevation, he had avoided self-examination. However, only days before, he had sent Hogun and 200 of his Legion Lancers into the Outlands. At first, he had held to the belief that it was a sensible military decision. But as the days passed and no word came, he had agonized over his orders. It had little to do with strategy, but everything to do with jealousy. Hogun, he had realized with sick horror, was the best soldier in the Druss. When he had returned and told Orin that his decision had proved a wise one, far from bolstering Orin, it had finally opened his eyes to his own inadequacy. He had considered resigning, but could not face the disgrace. He had even contemplated suicide, but could not bear the thought of the dishonor it would bring to his uncle, Abilene. All he could do was to die on the first wall, and this he was prepared for. He had feared Druss would rob him even of that.
"I have been a fool, Druss," he said at last.
"Enough of that talk," snapped the old man. "Listen to me. You are the gun. From this day on, no man will speak ill of you. What you fear, keep to yourself and believe in me. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone fails at something. The Druss will hold, for I will be damned if I will let it fall. If I had felt you were a coward, Orin, I would have tied you to a horse and sent you packing. You have never been in a siege, nor led a troop into battle. Well, now you will do both, and do it well, for I will be beside you. Get rid of your doubts. Yesterday is dead. Past mistakes are like smoke in the breeze. What counts is tomorrow, and every tomorrow, until Woundweaver gets here with reinforcements. Make no mistake, Orin, when we survive, and the songs are sung, you will be worth your place in them, and no one will sneer. Not a soul. Believe it. Now I have talked enough. Give me your seal on parchment, and I will start today with my duties.
Will you want me with you today?
Best not, said Druss. I have a few heads to crack.
Minutes later, Druss marched towards the officer's mess, flanked by two legion guards, tall men and well-disciplined. The old man's eyes blazed with anger, and the guards exchanged a glance as they marched. They could hear the sounds of singing coming from the mess, and were set to enjoy the sight of Druss the Legend in action. He opened the door and stepped into the lavishly furnished interior. A trestle bar had been set up against the far wall, stretching out into the center of the room. Druss pushed his way past the revelers, ignoring the complaints, then placed one hand beneath the trestle and hurled it into the air, scattering bottles, goblets, and food to shower on the officers. Stunned silence was followed by an angry surge of oaths and curses. One young officer pushed his way to the front of the crowd. Dark-haired, sullen-eyed, and haughty, he confronted the white-bearded warrior.
"Who the hell do you think you are, old man?" he said.
Druss ignored him, his eyes scanning the 30 or so men in the room. A hand grabbed his jerkin.
"I said who?"
Druss backhanded the man across the room to crash into the wall and slither to the floor, half-stunned.
"I am Druss, sometimes called Captain of the Axe. In Ventria they call me Druss the Sender. In Vagria I am merely the Axeman. To the Nadir I am Deathwalker. In Lentria I am the Silver Slayer. But who are you, you dung-eating lumps of offal? Who the hell are you?"
The old man drew Snaga from her sheath at his side.
"I have a mind to set an example today. I have a mind to cut the fat from this ill-fated fortress. Where is Dun Pinar?"
The young man pushed himself from the back of the crowd, a half-smile on his face, a cold look in his dark eyes.
"I am here, Druss."
"Gan Orin has appointed me to take charge of the training and preparation of the defences. I want a meeting with all officers on the training ground in an hour. Pinar, you organize it. The rest of you clear up this mess and get yourselves ready. The holiday is over. Any man who fails me will curse the day he was born."
Beckoning Pinar to follow him, he walked outside.
"Find Hogan," he said, "and bring him to me at once in the main hall of the keep."
"Yes, sir. And, sir..."
"Out with it, lad."
"Welcome to Drostelnok."
The news flashed through the town of Delnok like a summer storm, from tavern to shop to market stall. Druss was here. Women passed the message to their men. Children chanted his name in the alleys. Tales of his exploits were retold, growing by the minute. A large crowd gathered before the barracks, watching the officers milling at the parade ground. Children were lifted high, perched on men's shoulders to catch a glimpse of the greatest Drenai hero of all time. When he appeared, a huge roar went up from the crowd, and the old man paused and waved. They couldn't hear what he told the officers, but the men moved with a purpose as he dismissed them. Then, with a final wave, he returned to the keep. Within the main hall once more, Druss removed his jerkin and relaxed in a high-backed chair. His knee was throbbing and his back ached like the devil, and still Hogan had not appeared. He ordered a servant to prepare him a meal, and inquired after the Earl. The servant told him the Earl was sleeping peacefully. He returned with a huge steak, lightly done, which Druss wolfed down, following it with a bottle of finest Lentrian red. He wiped the grease from his beard and rubbed his knee. After seeing Hogan, he would have a hot bath, ready for tomorrow. He knew his first day would tax him to his limits, and he mustn't fail.
"Gan Hogan, sir,"
announced the servant. "And Don Elikas."
The two men who entered lifted Druss's heart. The first, it had to be Hogan, was broad-shouldered and tall, clear-eyed with a square jaw. And Elikas, though slimmer and shorter, had the look of eagles about him. Both men wore the black and silver of the Legion, without badges of rank. It was a long-standing custom going back to the days when the Earl of Bronze had formed them for the Vagrian Wars.
"Be seated, gentlemen," said Druss.
Hogan pulled up a chair, reversing it in order to lean on the back. Elikas perched himself on the edge of the table, arms folded across his chest. Elikas watched the two men carefully. He had not known what to expect from Druss, but he had begged Hogan to allow him to be present at the meeting. He worshipped Hogan, but the grim old man seated before him had always been his idol.
"Welcome to Delnok, Druss," said Hogan. "You have lifted morale already. The men speak of nothing else. I am sorry to have missed you earlier, but I was at the first wall supervising the archery tourney."
"I understand you have already met the Nadir," said Druss.
"Yes, they will be here in less than a month."
"We shall be ready, but it will need hard work. The men are badly trained, if trained at all. That must change. We have only 10 surgeons, no medical orderlies, no stretcher-bearers, and only one hospital. And that is at Wall 1, which is no good to us. Comments?"
"An accurate appraisal. All I can add is that, apart from my men, there are only a dozen officers of worth."
"I have not yet decided the worth of any man here. But let us stay positive for a moment. I need a man of mathematical persuasion to take charge of the food stores and to prepare ration rotors. He will need to shift his equations to match our losses. He must also be responsible for liaison and administration with Gan Orin."
Druss watched as the two men exchanged glances, but said nothing of it.
"Dunpina is your man," said Hogan. "He virtually runs the Druss now."
Druss's eyes were cold as he leaned towards the young general.
"There will be no more comments like that, Hogan. It does not become a professional soldier. We start today with a clean slate. Yesterday is gone. I shall make my own judgments, and I do not expect my officers to make sly comments about each other."
"I would have thought you would want the truth," interposed Elikas before Hogan could answer.
"The truth is a strange animal, laddie. It seems to vary from man to man. Now keep silent. Understand me, Hogan. I value you. Your record is a good one. But from now on, no one speaks ill of the first gun. It is not good for morale, and what is not good for our morale is good for the Nadir. We have enough problems."
Druss stretched out a length of parchment and pushed it to Elikas with a quill and ink.
"Make yourself useful, boy, and take notes. Put Pinar at the top. He is our quartermaster. Now we will need 50 medical orderlies and 200 stretcher-bearers. The first, Kalvar Sin, can choose from volunteers, but the bearers will need someone to train them. I want them to be able to run all day. Misael knows they will need to when the action gets warm. These men will need stout hearts. It is no easy thing to run about on a battlefield lightly armed, for they will not be able to carry swords and stretchers. So, who do you suggest to pick and train them?"
Hogan turned to Elikas, who shrugged.
"You must be able to suggest someone," said Druss.
"I don't know the men of Druss Delnok that well, sir," said Hogan, "and no one from the Legion would be appropriate."
"Why not? They are warriors. We shall need them on the wall. Who is your best ranker?"
"Bar Britan. But he's a formidable warrior, sir."
"That is why he is the man. Listen well. The stretcher-bearers will be armed with daggers only, and they will risk their lives as much as the men battling on the walls. But it is not a glorious task, so the importance of it must be highlighted. When you name your best ranker as the man to train the bearers, and work with them during the battle, this will come home to them. Bar Britan must also be given 50 men of his choice as a moving troop to protect the bearers as best he can."
"I bow to your logic, Druss," said Hogan.
"Bow to nothing, son. I make mistakes as well as any man.
If you think me wrong, be so good as to damn well say so.
Put your mind at rest on that score, Axeman, snapped Hogan.
Good. Now, as to training, I want the men trained in groups of 50. Each group is to have a name. Choose them from legends, names of heroes, battlefields, whatever. As long as the names stir the blood. There will be one officer to each group, and 5 rankers, each commanding 10 men. These under-leaders will be chosen after the first 3 days' training. By then we should have taken their mark. Understood?
Why names? Asked Hogan. Would it not be simpler if each group had a number?
Gods, man, that's 180 names to find. There is more to warfare, Hogan, than tactics and training. I want proud men on those walls, men who know their comrades and can identify with them. Group Karnak will be representing Karnak the One-Eyed, where Group 6 would be merely identified. Throughout the next few weeks, we will set one group against another in work, play, and mock combat. We will weld them into units, proud units. We will mock and cajole them, sneer at them even. Then, slowly, when they hate us more than they do the Nadir, we will praise them. In as short a time as possible, we must make them think of themselves as an elite force. That's half the battle. These are desperate, bloody days, days of death. I want men on those walls, strong men, fit men, but most of all, proud men. Tomorrow ye will choose the officers and allocate the groups. I want the groups running until they drop, and then running again. I want sword practice and wall scaling. I want demolition work done by day and night. After 10 days we will move on to unit work. I want the stretcher bearers running with loads of rock until their arms burn and their muscles tear. I want every building from wall 4 to wall 6 razed to the ground and the tunnels blocked. I want 1,000 men at a time working on the demolition in 3-hour shifts. That should straighten backs and strengthen sword arms. Any questions?
Hogan spoke.
No. Everything you wish for will be done. But I want to know this. Do you believe the Dross can hold until the autumn? Of course I do, laddie, lied Dross easily. Why else would I bother? The point is, do you believe it?
Oh, yes, lied Hogan smoothly. Without a doubt.
The two men grinned. Join me in a glass of Lentrian Red, said Dross. Thirsty work, this planning business.
Chapter 11. In a wooden loft, its window in the shadow of the great keep, a man waited, drumming his fingers on the broad table. Behind him, pigeons ruffled their feathers within a wickerwork coop. The man was nervous, on edge. Footsteps on the stairs made him reach for a slender dagger. He cursed and wiped his sweating palm on his woolen trousers. A second man entered, pushed the door shut, and sat opposite the first. The newcomer spoke.
Well, what orders are they?
We wait, but that may change when word reaches them that Dross is here. One man can make no difference, said the newcomer. Perhaps not. We shall see. The tribes will be here in 5 weeks. 5? I thought I know, said the first man. But Ulrich's firstborn is dead. A horse fell on him. The funeral rites will take 5 days. And it's a bad omen for Ulrich. Bad omens can't stop a Nadir horde from taking this decrepit fortress.
What is Dross planning?
He means to seal the tunnels. That's all I know so far. Come back in 3 days, said the first man. He took a small piece of paper and began to write in tiny letters upon it. He shook sand on the ink, blew it, then reread what he had written. Death Walker here. Tunnels sealed. Morale higher.
Perhaps we should kill Dross, said the newcomer, rising.
If we are told to, said the first man. Not before. I will see you in 3 days, then. At the door he adjusted his helm, sweeping his cloak back over his shoulder badge. He was a Draenei Dun.
Kul Gilad
lay slumped on the short grass by the wall of the cookhouse at Eldibar, breath heaving from his lungs in convulsive gasps. His dark hair hung in lank rat's tails which dripped sweat to his shoulders. He turned on his side, groaning with the effort. Every muscle in his body seemed to be screaming at him. 3 times he and Bregan, with 48 others of Group Karnak, had raced against 5 other groups, from Wall 1 to Wall 2, scaled the knotted ropes, moved to Wall 3, scaled the knotted ropes, moved to Wall 4, an endless, mindless agony of effort. Only his fury kept him going, especially after the first wall. The white-bearded old bastard had watched him beat 600 men to Wall 2, his burning legs and tired arms pumping and pulling in full armour. First man! And what did he say? A staggering old man, followed by staggering old women. Well, don't just lie there, boy. On to Wall 3. Then he had laughed. It was the laugh that did it. Gilad could have killed him then, slowly. For 5 miserable, endless days, the soldiers of Drosdelnok had run, climbed, fought, torn down buildings in the teeth of hysterical curses from the dispossessed owners, and trundled cart upon cart of rubble into the tunnels at Walls 1 and 2. Working by day and night, they were bone-weary. And still that fat old man urged them on. Archery tourneys, javelin contest, swordplay, dagger work, and wrestling, in between the heavy work, made sure that few of the Coles bothered to frequent the taverns near the keep. Damned Legion did, though. They glided through the training with grim smiles and hurled scornful jests at the farmers who sought to keep up with them. Let them try working 18 hours in the fields, thought Gilad. Bastards! Grunting with pain, he sat up, pushing his back against the wall, and watched others training. He had 10 minutes yet before the next shift was required to fill the rubble carts. Stretcher-bearers toiled across the open ground, bearing rocks twice the weight of an injured man. Many had bandaged hands. Alongside them, the black-bearded Bar Britan shouted them on. Bregan tottered towards him and slumped to the grass. His face was cherry-red. Silently, he handed Gilad an orange half. It was sweet and fresh. "Thanks, Breg." Gilad's eyes moved over the other 8 men in his group. Most were lying silently, though Midras had begun to retch. The idiot had a girl in the town and had visited her the night before, creeping back into barracks for an hour's sleep before daybreak. He was paying for it now. Bregan was bearing up well, a little faster, a little fitter, and he never complained, which was a wonder. "Almost time, Gil," he said. Gilad glanced towards the tunnel where the work was slowing down. Other members of Group Karnak were moving towards the partly demolished homes. "Come on, lads," said Gilad. "Let's be sitting up. Let's start taking some deep breaths." Groans followed the order, and there was scarce a movement from the men. "Come on now. Group Kestrian are already moving. Bastards!" Gilad pushed himself to his feet, pulling Bregan up with him. Then he moved to each of the men. Slowly they rose and began to move towards the tunnel.
"I think I'm dying," said Midras.
"You will if you let us down today," muttered Gilad. "If that old swine laughs at us one more time..." "A pox on him," said Midras. "You don't see him working up a sweat, do you?" At dusk the weary men trooped away from the tunnels towards the peace and relative sanctity of the barracks. They hurled themselves onto narrow cots and began to unbuckle breastplates and greaves.
"I don't mind the work," said Bailey,
a stocky farmer from a village neighbouring Gilad's,
"but I don't see why we have to do it in full armour."
No one answered him. Gilad was almost asleep when a voice bellowed,
"Group Karnak to the parade ground!"
Druss stood in the parade ground square, hands on hips, his blue eyes scanning the exhausted men who stumbled from the barracks, their eyes squinting against the torchlight. Flanked by Hogan and Orin, he smiled grimly as the men shambled into ranks. The 50 men of Group Karnak were joined by Group Kestrian and Group Sword. Silently they waited for whatever foul idea Druss had now dreamed up.
"You 3 groups," said Druss, "are to run the length of the wall and back.
The last man's group will run again. Go!
As the men set off for the grueling half-mile, someone yelled from the crowd,
"What about you, fat man? Come in!"
"Not this time," Druss yelled back. "Don't be last!"
"They're exhausted," said Orin. "Is this wise, Druss?"
"Trust me. When the attacks come, men will be dragged from sleep fast enough. I want them to know their limits." 3 more days passed. Tunnel 1 was almost filled, and work had begun on Tunnel 2. No one cheered now as Druss walked by, not even among the townsfolk. Many had lost their homes, others were losing business. A deputation had visited Orin, begging for demolition to cease. Others found that sight of the clear ground between walls only emphasized that Druss expected the Nadir to take the dross. Resentment grew. But the old warrior swallowed his anger and pushed on with his plan. On the 9th day, something happened which gave the men a fresh topic of conversation. As Group Karnak assembled for their run, Gan Orin approached Dun Mendar, the officer commanding,